Hello and welcome to the latest Mooney on Politics podcast, which I'm recording on Monday the 18th of July on a glorious sunny afternoon. It's about 2:30 here, and this week's podcast, I don't know why I keep saying week because I barely do skip an odd week. The latest podcast of this podcast, this episode, features two recent pieces that I put together. First one I wrote last Thursday and Friday, and this one, the second one, is one that I've just posted in the last 30 minutes or so. And both of them look at recent developments in politics, and we're seeing a kind of a slightly febrile atmosphere building up now at the moment, but possibly due to the Dáil term coming to an end. But also I think that a lot of political... There's a lot of things that are built up in the political system that are due to come to a head, in particular in the two main parties, in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And that's what I address in the two pieces, but I'm going to treat it as one podcast. Now, earlier, or so the starting point for this was last week with the launch in McKee Barracks of the government's action plan response to the report of the Commission on the Defence Forces. It's entitled Building for the Future, Change from Within. Now, beyond any doubt, it's a very, very good document because it commits the government to moving the state's level of defence capability to the level of two ambition, what was called LOA2, as set out in the Commission's report, and it plans to do this over a period of 6 years between now and 2028. So in terms of cash and people, this means growing the annual defence budget to $1.5 billion by 2028, and that's set in today's prices, plus expanding the defence establishment by 2,000 personnel. That's a mixture of civil and military, mainly military, but there'll be some civilian personnel within there as well. That's totally understandable too. Now, assuming that it does hit its targets, this represents, as the Taoiseach and the two ministers said, the largest increase in defence funding in the history of the state. And as one of the very many folks who've bemoaned the willful political neglect of defence over the past decade, I was genuinely pleased to see this significant shift in direction and approach. But my instinct is still to hold off on the partying and the celebrations. Now, I know the Bible tells us that we should make merry and be glad, quote, when the prodigal child returns, and that we should go and kill for him that fatted calf, and permit covering for Adger some measure of self-congratulations. But doesn't the parable also start out with the prodigal, returning prodigal, showing some measure of remorse and contrition? Because I wasn't saying any of that last week. Indeed, to belabour the parable point beyond all endurance, lo, what we saw instead was the righteous older brother, let's call him Martin in this case, metaphorically laud and embrace the prodigal Simon as if nothing had ever happened, and that they had forever been as one and together. But what makes for good parables often makes for lousy politics, a point of which I'll return shortly. Though the increased investment is welcome, much of it will be spent on undoing the damage caused by the neglect and underinvestment of the past decade. The evidence for this lies in the Commission's own considered definition of level of ambition too. They define it as, quote, building on current capability to address specific priority gaps in our ability to deal with an assault on Irish sovereignty and to serve in higher intensity peace support operations. Yet, a lot of this is about plugging gaps in our defence capability, gaps that successive governments, and sadly that includes the first 2 years of this government, to develop since 2012. Now, you can possibly give them an excuse up to 2013 or 2014 because of the budgetary crisis, but that's as far as that goes. Because the recruitment of 2,000 extra personnel, both civil and military, is a good example of this gap. Because while 2,000 extra men and women looks like a sizable increase, that's because the government sets its own 2015 white paper on defence as the starting point for the measure. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with this epoch-making document, and that possibly includes most of the Fine Gael, Labour and Independent senior and junior ministers who served in government during that time, this was defence white paper prepared during Minister Simon Coveney's last stint in defence, in which the Defence Force establishment strength was officially cut from 10,500 to 9,500. And with that move, Coveney made permanent the 2009 temporary reduction of 1,000 military personnel. These were made under the Board Snip-Muir measures and were intended to be temporary. These were a short-term measure. And it's worth recalling that at the time of the 2015 White Paper's launch, the real-time strength of Defence Forces was below that 5,500. In fact, it was 9,050. And that the force strength has actually even dumped below this figure at various points in the intervening years. Now, I'm not trying to deny that the planned increase is welcome, merely to put it into a context. Because by 2028, assuming all targets are met, we can expect to see a Defence Forces with fewer than 1,000 more personnel in uniform than it had in 2002. Now, whether this is 400, 500 or 600 extra people in uniform is impossible to say, because it depends on what the breakdown is between the military and civilian numbers within that 2,000, and so far I haven't seen any indication of what that is. Now, that's kind of understandable, because I do think there's a certain amount of need to see where the gaps are, and although the Commissioner did a huge amount of work on this, but I think let's watch that figure very, very carefully. So is this progress? Yes, it is. But perhaps Fine Gael should maybe cut down the self-congratulations until we get to a point beyond which we had previously reached 2 decades ago. Now, I don't propose to delve any further into the government's defence proposals just now, except to voice some concerns over its plans on cybersecurity. Now, the government has accepted most of the Commission's recommendations on enhancing the Defence Force's capabilities in cyber defence, but one of them it seems reluctant to commit itself on. That was the recommendation from the Commission that there will be increased civil-military engagement across government on the development of appropriate structures and processes for countering hybrid warfare, learning from the current international experience. But the government has said that it's not going to move on that immediately, and it's put this one on the back burner. Now, that would cause me concern, because this wasn't a commitment to do something. This was a recommendation to look at doing something, and that's really very bad. Because especially as this was the most important of the Commission's suite of recommendations on building cyber defence capacity. Because it's the one that would have brought the Defence Forces from being responsible for their own cybersecurity alone to giving them a key role in national cyber defence. Yet despite 6 months of consideration, the Minister and Department have marked it down for further evaluation. Now, as with all government pronouncements, we cannot ignore the politics of what happened in McKee Barracks last week, especially as it happened between two polls that brought even more bad news for the government parties. That was the Red Sea poll and the latest Irish Times poll. Now, in the intervening period, we had a BNA poll. But all of them show the same thing. Fianna Fáil on the decline, Micheál Martin's popularity starting to plummet. It also came after a no-confidence motion, actually came the day after the Sinn Féin no-confidence motion, which saw the government win by a convincing, if not actually flattering, margin. But government backbenchers would be wise not to read too much into it, despite Micheál Martin's protestations, and to remember that Sinn Féin's motion no-confidence was not about making trouble for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, or even the Greens, but about starting to pile pressure onto those independent TDs who from time to time backed the government in Dáil votes. It was just the first step in Sinn Féin's plan to start targeting independent seats so that to make them more winnable by Sinners the next time round. Their strategy goes as this: paint all independents as just crypto Fianna Fáil or Fine Gaelers propping up the government, and Sinn Féin thinks that will leave them able to take those seats in either 2023 or 2024. Now, it's not a crazy strategy, but I think it's a flawed one, as it assumes that the independents haven't already noticed the sniper at work red laser dots that have started to appear on the foreheads. They have, because the current cohort of independents are a much wilier bunch than the Sinn Féin backroom people may realise, a point that was made very, very well by Deputy Marion Harkin during Tuesday's debate, when she told Mary Lou McDonald directly, quote, "I do not appreciate being told by the leader of Sinn Féin about standing with people. Her words show disrespect for my mandate, all independent deputies and the people who elect us." It was a good point well made by Marion Harkin, but it was a point made maybe less eloquently by most independents during that debate, including those who voted for the motion of confidence, who voted with the government or otherwise. Now, for me, going back to the defence launch, for me, that outing in McKee summed up much of Fianna Fáil's problems in government. Problems which Gerry Howland superbly explained in his Irish Times piece last Friday. Because as he stood in McKee Barracks, the Taoiseach and leader of Fianna Fáil was both happy to aid Fine Gael in a shameless whitewashing of its appalling record on defence, and also seemed content to ignore the reality that his party had not only called out Fine Gael for most of a decade over this, but had offered proposals in line with what was not being announced. So therefore you had the Taoiseach finding himself unable to make score the political points while having to watch Fine Gael do a lap of honour. And this, Taoiseach tells his dwindling number of party loyalists, is the price that must be paid to hold this coalition together. Now, maybe it is when it comes to issues that voters do not see of critical importance, but you cannot be as blasé when it comes to housing, health and the cost of living. And it would appear that at least 30 of Mr. Martin's parliamentary colleagues would agree with me. And by the way, it's worth remembering, put that 30 into context, there are just 56 members in the current Fianna Fáil parliamentary party, if you exclude Mark McSherry, who lost the whip, and Seán O'Farrell, who sits as Ceann Comhairle. You can actually reduce it even further, probably, by taking out Mark Daly, who is sitting as Carhaileach of the Shannon in the same position as the Ceann Comhairle. Now, that's not to say that every one of those 30 Oireachtas members want to see Martin immediately gone as leader and as Taoiseach and want to see a heave. But it is a sign that they are hearing the same thing from their constituents as the people told the most recent Sunday Independent Ireland Think poll, namely that 25% do not believe that Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael stand up for people like me, and 43% say that the government is, quote, failing to tackle housing and healthcare. As Taoiseach heads to the land of the rising sun today and tomorrow on the last leg, on the latest leg of his international statesman global tour, his 30 Fianna Fáil Oireachtas colleagues have finally grasped what 26% of their fellow members knew when they opposed the programme for government and had rejected this government construct back in June of 2020. Because those of us who voted against the deal saw the 2020 election result as momentum and as policy shifting as 1918, 1932, 1989, or the 2011 elections, and that the results required a response that showed to the voters that Fianna Fáil had heeded their call for change. In 2020, voters demanded a change of policy in housing and healthcare, but they do not see this government, dominated by Varadkar's style of Fine Gael leadership, delivering that change. And if things within this government, but especially within Fianna Fáil, do not change soon, and in the scale necessary, then the next time out, the voters won't just be demanding change. They'll just be demanding Sinn Féin. They're not that Sinn Féin, but is that going to be changed? Well, it may be changed, but possibly not in the way that people imagined, and not all changes for the better in those circumstances. Now, that was the piece that I had written last Friday. In the intervening period, we've had a very interesting development in terms of the programme for government and the call from Willie O'Dea, John Lahart, Jim O'Callaghan, Jackie Cahill and others within Fianna Fáil for a midpoint review of the term of the programme for government. A call that was echoed by the likes of Charlie Flanagan and Regina Doherty, I think it was Thomas Conway this morning within Fine Gael. So you really have to wonder if the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste should really understand politics at all, because their immediate and absolute refusal to accede to calls for a midpoint review of the programme of government coming from their senior representatives in the parties would suggest that they don't. Because what's so wrong with agreeing to a midpoint review, a political stocktake of the programme for government that was so painstakingly negotiated back in June 2020? Why shouldn't the moment at which the two leaders switch roles also involve an appraisal of how effective this government has been at implementing the lengthy programme it announced just over 2 years ago? Now, I can totally understand neither side, neither Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, nor the Greens, wanting to have a complete and total renegotiation of the programme. But surely it is political common sense to examine and to review what areas are ahead of targets, which ones are behind targets, and which are in need of additional attention. Like, it's not as if things haven't changed dramatically since the deal was negotiated. But despite all this, on Saturday, a spokespeople for both the Taoiseach Micheál Martin and the Tánaiste Leo Varadkar issued virtually identical statements separately to Hugh O'Connell of the Sunday Independent, stating, this is what the statement said, "The programme for government was negotiated for the lifetime of the government. The members voted 4-1 for it in 2020 and no review was planned." Almost verbatim, that statement came from the two party leaders. And then the Taoiseach went and made the same point again, suggesting that Fianna Fáil members had voted 80% yes to the deal in his interviews given in Dean's Grange Cemetery on Sunday, following his oration at the graveside of Sean Lamass. Now, in the interest of accuracy, it's only fair for me to remind the Taoiseach that it was actually Fine Gael who voted 80% in favour of the deal, and they actually had a delegate vote, they didn't have a full membership vote. They had it on some kind of a college of electors with constituencies having a certain number of votes. Now, that was widely reported at the time. It was also reported openly, because Fianna Fáil members did vote, that within Fianna Fáil, 74% of people had voted in favour of the agreement and 26% had voted against. Now, I know it can be easy to confuse things that are so close together that they are virtually intertwined. But as one of the dissenting 26% in Fianna Fáil at the time, I am not as relaxed or as phlegmatic as the Taoiseach is when it comes to mislaying the other 6%, either in terms of this result or in terms of drops in the opinion polls. Indeed, governments in which Micheál Martin served were far from worried about programme for government reviews. From 1997 onwards, the Fianna Fáil Progressive Democrat governments produced and published an annual review of the implementation of the programme for government, and this was done department by department. These appeared around the 1 year anniversary of the formation of that government, at which the first government was in June, and included introductions by both the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste, which reviewed progress, trumpeted the achievements, and signalled where progress remained to be made. Now, these annual reviews benefited everyone. They were handy scorecards for ministers and for the government on where the government was in fulfilling its mandate. They were an incentive to some ministers to pick up the pace and a useful mechanism for those ministers in helping to drive some policies through the departments where the officials were perhaps less enthusiastic about that policy. They were also a very important exercise in openness and transparency. The reviews were not just quietly published on the web, but they were launched formally each year by the leaders of the government. And indeed, in the article includes a link to a 2004 article in the Irish Times setting out the achievements in the 2004 programme for government. So what if the Taoiseach and Tánaiste got to fear? Far from opposing a midpoint review, the Taoiseach should be embracing the calls from Willie O'Dea, James O'Connor, Jeffrey Cahill and others, and not just agreeing to a midpoint review, but going further and committing to an annual review each June for the next few years. Yep, now I do accept the first review will definitely show slippages on the very significant and very specifically timed commitments that were made back in June 2020. For example, the election of a Limerick mayor, something I've raised here a couple of times before, is an obvious one. But it's better to get the pain over now and recommit to fresh and achievable timelines, especially as people as public do accept that COVID-19 did make some of the timelines promised in 2020 unrealistic. It would also mean acknowledging that closing down the building sector during COVID-19 was a grievous error, that this is something the Taoiseach has partly conceded in interviews. But instead, Micheál Martin risks repeating the politically fatal mistake he made back in December 2018, when he made Osola run on his party's confidence supply agreement in Fine Gael and offered Varadkar a blank cheque renewal for a further year of that government with no review or no other consideration. Now, I said that was a mistake at the time and I wasn't alone. But the voters gave their verdict on that decision too in February 2020, and it was not a glowing one. I hope Micheál Martin now realises the massive error of judgment he made in prolonging the life of the worst government in my living memory by announcing the continuity of supply and confidence in supply in 2018. Members of his front bench at the time advised him against it. Now, though he enjoys the trappings of office as Taoiseach, it is a construct that limits and constricts him. Construct that is a consequence of his own poor political judgment back then. Because no matter what he does now, the reality is that after December the 14th, Micheál Martin will never be Taoiseach again. But even more worryingly, he will see and feel his political power and influence ebb away as the clock ticks away his remaining time in office. The only people over whom he holds any sway right now are the small number of TDs hoping for promotion and preferment in any reshuffle. But even that power is diminishing, because some of those TDs were passed over in 2020 by Micheál Martin, now believe and now fear that becoming a junior minister in December 2022 or January 2023 and getting to serve a year or so in office could actually reduce the chances of being re-elected at the next general election. Now, when he took the Fianna Fáil leadership in 2011, and by the way, new party leaders take the leadership, it's not passed along to them. De Valera and Lamass are the only two in the history of Fianna Fáil who, you can say, left at times of their choosing. When he took the leadership, Micheál Martin wanted his legacy to be that of a leader who turned the party's fortunes around and took it from the edge of the abyss in 2011 and straight back to the centre of Irish politics. And he achieved that in 2016, an achievement that cannot be taken away from him. But then in late 2018 and 2019, he misstepped and he squandered it. So today, his legacy is that he took the party back from the edge of the abyss in 2011, only to lead it straight back there again in 2020 and 2021. That's a dreadful legacy, especially if it includes the tagline, "The last Fianna Fáil Taoiseach ever." Now, Micheál Martin can do very little to change the first part of it, but he can still do something about the second part, and their choice remains his, for now. So there are my thoughts at the moment on where we're going to. Again, they're very much skewed towards my former party, Fianna Fáil, and looking at what's happening there. I don't think you can overstate the importance of 30 TDs meeting together 2 weeks ago to voice their concerns. And as I say again, I think I said in both pieces, that does not mean that there is going to be a heave against Micheál Martin. But what it does say to him is that the majority of the members of his parliamentary party are not happy with the direction this government is going and are not happy with what they see as the future for that party and for themselves. And they want something done about it. And merely saying, no, all is okay, we're going the right course, the review is not necessary, everything's okay, is not going to cut it. So do I believe that there's a heave against Micheál Martin imminent? No. Do I think that it becomes more likely as time passes by? Yes, especially if Micheál Martin continues to do as he did over the weekend and to act as if everything is fine. All right, that's my latest podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Again, probably not the most hopeful I've ever penned, but that's life. Probably the next piece I put forward, and will probably be done, hopefully be done before this day next week, will be my annual political reading list. I have about 6 or 8 already chosen. I'll sit down over the next few days and pick out another 2 or 3. If anyone has any suggestions for something that they believe should be on the political reading list, be it national or international, European, Irish, UK, American, I'd be happy for your suggestions. So feel free to drop me an email or to drop a comment in below, either on my website or here, and I'll certainly look at them. But in the meantime, don't forget your sunscreen at the risk of turning into Baz Luhrmann. Hope you have a enjoyable week, and we'll talk to you probably this day next week. All right, bye-bye.